Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Today's host, Chris Kington Barker, will be talking with representatives for the organization recently formed through the alliance of Stand Strong and Rise, as they've joined together in their work with survivors, their loved ones, and the community to end gender-based violence. You are invited to listen and participate in the conversation. You can call in your questions to make them part of today's discussion at 805-549-8855 or email your comments and questions to today's guests at voices@kcbx.org. Chris, hello, how are you?
Hey, good, Francisco. Good to see you, and thank you for the handoff. Lumina Alliance is a new organization born out of the merger of Stand Strong and Rise Slow. Just this week, the organization revealed its new name, and in today's show, we'll talk more about the decision for the organizational merger, the benefits anticipated to better serve survivors and their families throughout San Luis Obispo County. My guests from Lumina Alliance are Jennifer Adams, CEO, Jane Pomeroy, CPO, and Karen Borges, COO. And thank you all for joining me today. Got lots of questions for you, but I think the first and top question to start with is why the merger and why now?
So thanks so much for having us, Chris.
Jennifer.
Yeah, we're grateful to be here and be able to talk about this. Why the merger? It makes sense. One of the most important things that many people don't realize is how many people experience both some type of sexual assault or sexual abuse in their lifetime, as well as some type of intimate partner violence, whether that would be stalking or an abusive relationship. And so there's a lot of overlap there, and having to tell people that they need to go to one organization for one issue and another organization for the other issue is just not client-centered. It's not helpful. The other piece is that we were covering different areas of the county, and it was confusing. So not only confusing to clients, not knowing where to go, but confusing to law enforcement on who to call, other partner organizations, and even law enforcement, not quite sure which organization to call. So that's kind of the why behind it, is that it really just makes sense that we're one organization. The timing of it, I will tell you that this has been in conversation and for a couple decades, actually, as far as people talking about it, staff and leaders in the community. It's something that we get asked about a lot. And it just so happened that the timing was right. The previous executive director of Stand Strong had moved on to a national organization last summer, and I came in as interim director. And both the Rise and Stand Strong boards were interested in trying to have these talks. And so we did. And we merged as of July 1st and announced our new name yesterday. So
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit? Does somebody want to talk a little bit about why that name was chosen? Because there's a lot of meaning behind it. It wasn't just grabbed out of thin air, right?
No, and I did talk about this yesterday, so I actually pulled up my little speech about it. I will tell you, we worked with Verdin, and they were amazing, and it was a collaborative process. We had input from, we did surveys of staff, of constituents, clients. We got feedback from everyone that is a part of our organization. And so the name comes, Lumina is Latin origin, meaning light or to illuminate or shine. And so the name, what we want is for it to inspire hope and invoke feelings of safety and warmth, especially to the survivors that we're serving. It also acts as a metaphor for the work that we do in shining a light on the issues of sexual and intimate partner violence, which yeah. foster shame and guilt and horrible feelings in the dark. So the last piece of the light is that we want to act as a guiding light in the community mm-hmm. through our innovative prevention programs on how we can stop this from happening in the first place and put an end to our work, put an end to our jobs is what we would like. And so the Alliance or Alianza refers to the alliance of these organizations that have come together, as well as to the alliance with everyone in our community, because this is not just something that we can address alone and end or help everyone heal. We need the support of the community, from partner agencies and law enforcement to our supporters and our volunteers and our donors. So,
yeah. So talk a little bit about what this merger looks like, because, you know, as companies merge, they, you know, as organizations merge, it can look like a whole variety of things. And we've seen the good, bad, and the ugly from that over the years. What does this merger look like, and how has it come about in terms of staff and the services that you were providing? Can you talk a little about that?
I can talk about that.
Would you, Jane? Thank you.
Yeah, so there have actually been quite a few questions in the community about yeah. whether or not we're going to lose staff. Or
that's always the question, right?
And we are not. We're preserving all of our staff and all of our programs. We're in kind of a, now that we've launched and we're merged and we're one organization, now we have to do the nitty-gritty of integrating programs. And so, you know, we're in the process of doing that. And we're also starting some new programming. So one exciting effort is this new social marketing campaign called Redefine, which is in our prevention department. And it's focused on the emotional, physical, and relational well-being of San Luis Obispo's preteen boys. And their focus is on lowering rates of harm. So that's going to get rolled out in about a month now, and all of our other services are going to continue. So we've got our 24-hour crisis line. The new number is much easier to remember. It's 805-545-8888. Oh. And it's also an information line, so you can call it if you just have a question. And then we've got a clinical counseling program. We've got a legal program with attorneys on staff, as well as advocates who can support in applying for restraining orders. We have crisis support and advocacy, and we'll go out with people on accompaniments to court hearings and medical exams. What am I forgetting?
Emergency shelter and transitional housing. Yeah, so we do have three shelters, one located in San Luis Obispo and then two in the North County, as well as 10 transitional housing units, which six are located here in San Luis Obispo and four in Grover Beach. So I think just what Jane was saying, what's great about it is some of these were stand strongs and some of these were rises, and we were able to bring these two great organizations together that really complement each other mm-hmm. and bring these programs in that are just going to only help survivors even more.
How many staff, Jamie or Karen, through the two organizations do you now have combined?
We have almost 80 staff now.
Okay.
Huge. I was just in my little spiel yesterday at the event. I was talking about how when I first started at the SARP Center, which was the Rape Crisis Center at the time, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, we had about 8 staff.
Yeah.
And now we've got 80, and it's not because the need has grown. It's because awareness in the community has grown, and we've had more opportunities to receive bigger grants and funding, and just overall across the country, there's more support flowing into organizations like ours. So we're very grateful for that.
Does this make it possible for you to Is it easier now to get grants when you're not two organizations trying to vie for the same kind of funding or the same kind of funders locally who might support agencies that do similar things?
Yeah, you know, on one hand, it can be a real benefit in that we are larger. We have such a breadth of experience between the two organizations. So, you know, we know how to manage grants and, you know, do the reporting and the data collection and, you know, all those things. And so in some ways, we will have greater leverage in applying for and we'll be able to apply for larger grants. Locally, what happened when we did the RISE merger is we were able to maintain some of those funding streams, you know, so that we didn't lose one of them. Right. But for some of them, we will lose, you know, one or the other of the streams. So
right, because you both had the same stream.
Correct.
Is it possible that you may get a larger amount to accommodate the combined?
For some, yes, and for others, no. So in the end, you know, because this was a concern, especially of our boards when we were talking, like, well, wait, why would we do this if we're going to lose some, you know, some of our grant
funds?
But in the end, what we really believe is that having the combined organization is going to really increase the support of the community, because they no longer have to figure out which one of us they want to support.
Right.
We actually, one of the board members last night mentioned that he's had people say to him, well, I don't want to give to one and not the other, so I'm just not going to give to either one. It's like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, so we believe that the community, knowing that we are, you know, we've done the work to come together and serve the entire county, that we're gonna make up for any of that lost funding in community support.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned board, so you had two different boards. So what are you doing with your boards?
So both boards, everyone was invited to stay on the board. And basically, it was an opportunity for people that maybe had done a lot of work on the merger. And then, although I will say that the people who really were on the committees and stuff, they're all like, we want to stay on because we really want to see this thing through.
Right.
But we had other people that had been on for, you know, close to the end of their terms anyway. And so they felt like it was a good time to step off. So we have our new board numbers is a minimum of 13 and a maximum of 19.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at 14. So
that's great.
It is. It's because it's a really solid 14 people that mm-hmm. really are committed and care. And so one of the first things we'll be looking at is, you know, recruitment and what it is that we, you know, want to add to the board going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. What you mentioned the one program that is for teens, male teens, right? Can you talk just a moment about that, Jane, in terms of what that program's focus is?
Yeah, and in fact, I would encourage you to have our prevention team on once the campaign is launched, because they're really the experts. But we're going to have a website that is really designed for parents of preteen boys and children in general, with information about how to talk to kids about consent and what healthy relationships are and media literacy. Basically how to raise kind humans who respect one another.
That's an idea. Whoa.
and the idea is that everybody's got a role to play in this work, right? And so we're talking about redefining the way that we interact with our youth, redefining how we interact with our community, redefining our ideas about consent and relationships. And so it's really designed as a resource for parents, but for young people as well. And I believe the website is redefineslow.org. Mm-hmm. And that will be plastered on our website. We're going to be doing a billboard, and I haven't quite gotten there yet. And the hope is that it will become known as a hub for folks to go to find that kind of information.
That's fantastic.
Oh, and I'm sorry, one more thing. It's also designed to be a tool for teachers in schools. So the hope is that we can start integrating some of this into health class curriculums, for example, and bring in our prevention team to teach some of those classes.
And is it being designed locally? Or is this, yeah, it is. And it's being designed between the combined organizations.
Yes, correct.
So it's the first new program to come out of Lumina.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Very nice. Very nice. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices you hear with me today are representatives of Lumina Alliance, a new organization born out of the merger of Rise Slow and Stand Strong. My guests are Jennifer Adams, CEO, Jane Pomeroy, CPO, and Karen Borges, COO. If you have questions for today's guests or a comment about our topic, you just want to know more, or you want to say something about your thoughts about the merger, we welcome them. You can email us at voices@kcbx.org. So there, you know, when you talk about when you talk about some of your programs and some of what's going on, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air about just some of the changes that have happened in people's lives for COVID and organizations. One of the things that we were hearing a lot of from organizations that serve individuals who are victims of domestic violence is that there was a rise in the nation of incidents of domestic violence through COVID. Was that your local experience as well?
It definitely was with Stand Strong. We knew that at Stand Strong, when this had happened, the incidents was increasing, but we weren't always getting the phone calls. And we really had to, you know, think about that, because we were hearing from law enforcement about the increase, and we were hearing the statistics nationwide and in different countries about the increase of intimate partner violence. But we weren't seeing the calls coming on our crisis line. And we had to really think about that. And we talked to Rise at the time and said, what's going on? They were experiencing the same thing. And what we came up with was that we heard from our clients was they didn't feel safe to call because they were now at home with their abuser, and they weren't in a safe space to be able to make those phone calls, to be able to be in their car, to take their child to school, to have those opportunities to call. So I think COVID really, really did have an impact, and I'm sure Jane can add to that as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and simultaneously, while our phone calls were dropping, law enforcement was getting more and more reports for domestic violence and applications for restraining orders. And so the thought is that violence was escalating to an emergent level, and folks were bypassing our crisis line and just going straight to law enforcement right at the shutdowns. And then as things started opening up again and folks could return to work or send their kids back to school, or they had a little more room to breathe, maybe they weren't necessarily focused on addressing the violence or abuse in their home, then they started calling again. So, you know, as things shut down, things got quiet, as things opened up. So it was like a roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that things are opening up a little bit more, at least for the time being, what is the experience now? Is it again going back down, or?
So, I would say that we're seeing a consistent need for services. And I think people are finally getting to a point where we use this word a lot, right? Where maybe things are getting back to normal. People are able to reach out. Our legal department definitely feels it. They are seeing a lot of requests for restraining orders, child custody, things that are coming up that now maybe people feel more safe to reach out and explore. So that's what we were seeing definitely on our side. And I think, Jane, you might have more to add.
Yeah.
I've also heard from our advocates that there's a real financial need. So, folks are coming to us with requests for financial assistance. Housing has, it was hard before COVID, and now to try to find affordable housing for folks fleeing is nearly impossible. And so that usually housing and financial needs are really coming to the forefront right now.
And my only other thought is the therapy department, both Rise and Stand Strong, when COVID happened, had to really change the way that we did therapy almost immediately. Right. So we went to, a Zoom type model of doing therapy. And so getting back to in-person services, but the need is so great. And again, doing therapy in a Zoom, isn't always the most confidential for people, and they might not feel safe doing that. So providing opportunities, even during COVID, for clients to come into the offices in a private room to continue therapy services was really important during COVID.
Have you started back with in-person counseling again?
We have, and we're very excited.
I bet.
Yeah, and our therapists are very excited to be offering that as well.
And how is it that, do you have people ask how you can maintain a safety factor? How are you doing that with COVID? Do you ask that your staff be immunized? Do you, what is your protocol for that?
So just as we have all along, we followed the recommendations of CDC, mm-hmm. California Department of Public Health, our local public health department. And Cal OSHA, as you know, Cal OSHA really heavily dictates how employees are handled, how employees are kept safe during something like this in the state of California. So what Cal OSHA came out with in June was requirements that said, we as employers, we're not requiring anyone to be vaccinated, but if people show us that they're vaccinated, we don't keep record of it, but we see that they, see their card, and then they don't have to wear a mask while at work. And for our employees that for, in a sundry of reasons choose or are not able to be vaccinated, they have to wear a mask while they're here. And so with our clients, it's basically on the honor system, but it's the same thing. So if they're vaccinated, they can come into the office without a mask. If not, we ask them to wear a mask.
Are people pretty compliant about that? Have you had much pushback?
I don't know. I don't know from a client perspective. Maybe Jane or Karen can respond to that if they know anything about that. But it's hard. I think it's hard for some staff to get used to, but we're settling into it. We're getting into our groove because for our poor staff, what we did, they started having to come back to the office mid-June, right? As things opened back up, we opened back up. We moved our offices around because we were merging. And so we want all of our departments to be together. And so staff is dealing with trying to come back to work after a year, as well as this merger and a move. So they've been under a lot of stress.
Yeah. It's a lot of change.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And they've been just amazing about it, because even with all of that and all the turmoil and all that's going on, they're picking up the phones. They're talking to people as they walk into our waiting rooms. They're seeing them for counseling sessions and helping them get into housing. So, those services that never stops while we're having to do all this other, you know.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. So when you mentioned that you kind of, are you physically moving people around? So you're blending the staff at each site. So they have new cohorts at each site. Okay. And how is that working?
I think it's working great. I think the staff are really excited about it. Our therapy department is a great example. They were here in our main admin building, and now we have them in their own separate space, which is extremely trauma-informed for clients to be able to go into a space that is specific for therapy services. So it's quiet, it's decorated, you know, very nicely in soft tones, and they're able to just see their therapist in that space and maybe not run into somebody else that they might know. So we really have been thoughtful about bringing our departments together and integrating our departments. And then, of course, you know, we do have three different locations. So we have our Paso Robles location up in the North County. We have our main San Luis Obispo office, which has a few different offices on site here. And then we also have another office in Grover Beach. So in each location, our hope is to offer the therapy, the legal, the housing, emergency shelter services in all of those locations as
okay.
well.
Okay. Okay, and right now it isn't, but that's the goal, to be able to have kind of a one-stop shop in each of the county primary sites, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be fabulous. Pretty close to meeting that in every location, I would mm-hmm. say. The only thing that we're not for South County is really an emergency shelter, but we do have our transitional housing down there. So I think we're able to meet all the other services in every location.
Yeah. We've, you know, nationally, we have seen this rise in violent outburst kinds of things, from people's reactions on freeways to interactions with one another to, you know, restaurants not opening early enough and verbally attacking staff because they didn't open. Are you seeing an increase in violence here in terms of the domestic violence or the level of the anger, that the lack of if you will, the lack of impulse control, or is it about the same that it has been? Are you seeing that fuse getting shortened?
What I have heard from our advocates, at least when we were in the thick of the pandemic, is that anecdotally, the stories that they were being told by advocates were increasingly more disturbing. Mm-hmm. And that just violence was escalating. I don't know if we can say whether or not incidence has increased more or less compared to the rest of the country locally. I don't know if Karen or Jenny has any more to say, but the increased stressors of living through a pandemic, trying to keep your family safe, maybe losing somebody to COVID on top yeah. of possibly losing your job or losing right. your abusive partner's job, you know, to whom you were relying on surviving, just mm-hmm. as that increased stress, so goes violent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we're we've been seeing just some things locally too, in terms of shootings or outbursts, or it's just, I don't think we're a Shangri-La that's immune to it. So one of the last shows that I did with the organizations had to do with stalking, you know, that we did in Cal Poly, talking about how stalking was really becoming more of an issue for, it was a survey that came out of Cal Poly that they were surprised, you know, it was one of the things that surprised them about, wow, we didn't think this would show up. Have you seen that kind of incidence with some of your younger your younger victims or younger individuals that you're working with in terms of not really seeing that as being assault and doing anything about it until it really becomes a problem as well?
You know, I don't know the statistics on that specifically for our organization, but I can speak to our younger generation of what we're seeing. And I can tell you this gets into our prevention programming again, because one of the things that I heard from our prevention staff is that, you know, they talk about healthy relationships and they talk about going into the schools. And one of the stories that recently came out was, you know, one of the students had explained that she was getting 60 calls a day from her boyfriend, and she thought that was normal, that he just cared. And so I think that speaks to, you know, getting into those healthy relationships and really knowing what is what it, you know, that that is probably not a healthy relationship, and that's why it's so important in our prevention setting.
I think with adults too, because I've had adults communicate, this is not gender specific either, of being out of somebody's visual range and having phone constantly going or texting constantly going, what are you doing, or questions about, you know, that are just irrelevant questions that could have been answered when the person got back to the house. So texting is an interesting tool.
Right. And it speaks to the culture that we have here and that we've had for a long time, which is that jealousy and enmeshment is equated with love. And, you know, and that's it's not true.
No, it can also be equated with power and control and anger, and but none of which is coming from Francisco, who I'm going to go back to right now because he's all about the love. So Francisco, I'm going to turn it over to you for a station break.
Thanks for tuning in to Central Coast Voices. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them to us at voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. Our conversation continues here on Central Coast Voices. Chris, back to you.
Welcome back. And Stand Strong and Rise Slow merged to create a new organization, Lumina Alliance, mutually dedicated to ending sexual assault and intimate partner violence. They have merged into one larger and stronger organization. Rise and Stand Strong will now be able to provide even more comprehensive, inclusive services and to those in San Luis Obispo County who've experienced gender-based violence. My guests today are Jennifer Adams, CEO, Jane Pomeroy, CPO, and Kieran Borges, COO. And we were talking during the break just about some of the other large things that have been kind of going on around that are in the wheelhouse of the kinds of services that you guys provide, which while you've had so much going on in your merger, have had a huge impact both on the local community and also nationally and internationally. And I think we'll start first locally with the Kristen Smart case that has been looming for, 25 years. And can you talk a little bit about some of the impact that that's had and how you're kind of adjusting to that?
Well, I'm just going to speak from a bigger picture. I was actually attending Cal Poly when Kristen Smart disappeared. And so having lived in the community throughout that process and worked in the Rape Crisis Center, was very involved with the Cal Poly campus, because then, you know, 5 years later, the Rex, a little bit less than that, the Rex Krebs.
Right.
So, you know, the amount of fear that was, you know, especially with young women here in the community, and the impact that it had on their, you know, behaviors, on how they were, you know, going about in the world. And now, you know, now it's coming out that, you know, Paul Flores, that there were probably additional victims, sexual assault victims. So it's in alignment with what we know, that most sexual, you know, sexual predators, that they have multiple victims. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain type of person that, you know, most, what we always say is most men don't do these things, right?
Right. Right.
But the majority of perpetrators are male, male identified, and this idea that they have multiple victims, it makes it very, in one way it can be validating to a victim, but in another way it can also be a lot of pressure, because there's a feeling of, if I don't do something about this, it's going to happen to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And you know, not everyone is able, you know, to come forward, and these are the most difficult cases to prosecute. And so it just really brings to the surface so many of the complications around the criminal justice system, you know, and dealing with issues of sexual assault. And it is a huge trigger for people who have had any experiences. This is a huge trigger to have this in the news constantly.
Yeah. Well, and then recently the Bill Cosby case, out of nowhere, you know, blindsided by the fact that Bill Cosby was released. And that was not a release because he was found not guilty, correct?
Right. And that's a really important piece to highlight. It was a technical issue. But again, it points back to the challenges of prosecuting sexual assault cases in our criminal justice system. And, you know, we know all too well how many victims choose not to take that path because of how difficult it is, personally for them, for a very, very uncertain and oftentimes unlikely positive outcome. You know, again, these cases and this information in the news impacts individuals who, you know, are victims themselves, or, you know, it can bring stuff back up. So we just want people to know that we are here. We're available. That 805-545-8888 number is a 24/7 number. And, you know, we're here for people, whether they are direct victims or whether they care about someone who's been victimized.
If, you know, we were talking earlier about domestic violence, and if someone were to have a situation where they were being harmed, they were feeling frightened, they wanted to reach out for help, can you walk me through what you could do as an organization to support that person, how you could support that person?
I think, you know, the best thing, that this question comes up quite often, is how can you support somebody who calls for services or needs services from an organization such as ours? And the best thing that you can do is, it's a crisis and information line. So it's a line that is staffed 24/7. As Jenny said, our phone number is 805-545-8888. When they call that phone number, they'll receive immediate assistance from either an advocate on staff or a staff member at the organization, or a volunteer crisis line person. And so I think it's really important for people to know that they can call that number if they're in crisis, or if they just need information about the services we provide. So that's the first step. But beyond that, we can help with all of the services. So do they need emergency shelter? Are they needing help with financial resources? Do they need therapy services? We can immediately refer them over to our therapy department. Are they in need of a restraining order? So then we're referring them immediately over to our legal department. So there's just a lot of different services that we provide. And the wonderful thing is our staff and our advocates and our volunteers are all trained on the resources that we provide. So we're able to help immediately.
So if I was wanting legal advice, I could come and meet with somebody there to get legal advice. Would I need to pay them?
No, that's the beautiful thing about our organization. All of our services are no cost to our clients.
Depending on my income, what if my income is high because my husband or wife's income is really high?
You know, as far as legal services, there may be, I do believe we do have one grant that may have some income limitations, but for the most part, the vast majority of our services are free. And when I say legal services in that manner, that's not a restraining order. We're not looking at income levels. We're not asking people what their income levels are. But beyond a restraining order, there may be some limitations in, you know, a dissolution or child custody if it was a longer case. So we would have to talk about that. But again, the vast majority of our services are free to our clients.
Do restraining orders work? If I got a restraining order, would it work?
Apologies. Oh. My screen just froze.
No, I think it was me. So if I got a restraining order, you know, and my partner said, I'm not going anywhere.
So restraining orders are a piece of paper, right?
Yeah.
And so they're only as good as we're willing to use them. So we have to be willing to call the police every time they are violated. And so a really, the important thing to know about those really lethal types of relationships is that leaving is the most dangerous time. They're at the highest risk when they leave. And so it is why we don't give advice. It's why we don't tell people to leave. That is purely a personal choice and when they feel ready to do that. And so when we talk to people and counsel them on restraining orders, it really is, you know, are you ready? Mm-hmm. It ends up falling to the victim to enforce it. And by enforcing it, I mean being willing to call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we just had an incident in Paso Robles last week. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, she had a restraining order and he was violating it. So it is why we have to be really respectful of victims. And when people say, why doesn't she just leave? This is a big reason, right? And so we try to provide all the support we can around that. And so oftentimes people come and are in counseling for quite some time before they're willing to make any kind of changes. And that's, you know, whatever feels right for them.
Do you ever work with partners together in terms of counseling? If someone was saying, you know, I just want them to quit being an a-hole and stop being so mean. I don't want to have to leave them. Can you fix them? You ever get that?
It's funny, and I think we're all laughing because it's something that we've been discussing. And Jenny and I were just talking about this, I think last week. You know, the model 20 years ago was no way, that would never happen. And it's not, you know, that's not how it works. And now the model is changing, and we're starting, you know, we're starting to talk about it. It is not something that we currently do as far as couples counseling, or, but it is something that we're starting to talk about. Do we bring in those who harm and have these conversations and talk about healthy relationships and what that looks like and work through that healing? So we've definitely had some conversations about it just recently, as of last week.
That's interesting. Yeah, the idea that it seems there are people that have never been taught about how to have a healthy relationship at all, and really don't have a clue, you know, because that may be their family's relationship, and where do they go?
Jane, you touched on something that the DA's office knows all too well, which, yeah, you know, they'll have what they think is a slam dunk case, so to speak. And their survivors will recant regularly in domestic violence cases. And the reason is because they just want the abuse to stop.
Yeah.
They don't want their partner to go to jail. They don't want to punish him or her. They just want the abuse to stop. Maybe they're still in love with that person. Maybe they have children with that person. Maybe they're financially dependent on that person. And so I think that there is a lot of room for growth in that department and serving people who cause harm, like Karen said. And it's something that we've considered in the past, is providing counseling to what would be called self-identified batterers. The challenge is getting them to walk through the door, right? Because many of them don't identify themselves as abusers or people mm-hmm. who cause harm. So there's a lot of education and work to do in that department.
Yeah. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast on KCBX, your Central Coast public radio station, your listener-supported radio station also. If you recently joined us for today's show, the voices you hear with me belong to Jennifer Adams, CEO, Jane Pomeroy, CPO, and Karen Borges, COO of the new organization, Lumina Alliance. It is a merger of Rise San Luis Obispo, or SLO, and Stand Strong. If you have questions or comments for today, we're coming to the final quarter hour of our show, but you can still send them in to voices@kcbx.org. One of the things that I've been hearing from other people as well is that first, now that we have multiple generations, we have multiple generations here at the same time, because there's almost distinction between some of the Gen Z, some of the Gen Y, millennial, baby boomers. Do you find that in some of the work that you do, very much like you're talking about now, there are there's some generational differences in terms of what's expected, in terms of how we communicate with one another, and how we want to collaborate for a solution as opposed to just a final solution? Are you finding that you're having to expand some of what the services are that you're providing and how you're providing them?
I think I want to ask, I'm going to let you go, Jane, too, because I know what you're going to talk about. But the first part of the question, that the idea that these issues change with generations, it doesn't really hold true for me. These are issues that can be part of family histories. Mm-hmm. They were in mine. It really is a cultural issue. It's really a cultural piece that, you know, mm-hmm. how we've learned to be in relationship with each other, and especially cross-gender, and how we teach, you know, male identified people to be men, and the violence that's often associated with that.
And you're seeing that as being consistent with
That's, you know, I mean, my mom was a, you know, 1960s, 70s feminist, and, you know, those it cycles, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have new generations of feminism. And so the language changes, you know, some focus changes, but those key components to what is necessary to heal people, because it's people who are hurt are the people that hurt other people, right?
Yeah.
And that's not changing with generations.
Yeah.
What has changed is what I'm going to let Jane talk about, which is how we communicate. Is that what you were going to speak to, Jane? Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to reiterate. So violence is learned. We know that. And it can be unlearned. And I think the difference between generations may be how it manifests or how it's learned. And so, you know, in today's world, technology is everything. And all of our young people are texting and chatting and doing all these newfangled things that I don't know about. But, you know, they're not picking up the phone and calling. And so we're actually really excited because we just implemented a chat feature on our website. So now a young person or somebody who is hard of hearing can chat, or somebody who just doesn't feel like talking, they can chat in and speak with an advocate that way and learn about resources that way. And, you know, we're living in this age where we're just receiving an onslaught of information constantly, for better or for worse. And so, you know, young folks are getting their information about relationships from their phones or their devices. And, you know, that can be really harmful depending on where they're getting their information. And so we're trying to capitalize on that, for lack of a better word, through things like a Redefine campaign, where we're helping people get information in the way that they're most comfortable with and what they're most used to. So that, in my mind, is a generational difference.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's cool that that you've adapted to that, and that you're making chat something that's available. I know that in teaching on Zoom, the chat is exploding during a class, because for some of the students, they will not ask the questions out loud, but they're sharing resources and going back and forth, and they're very fast at it, much faster than I can type during chat. What we have, you know, we have about 5 minutes. So I want to make sure that I'm addressing the things that you want to make sure that you get out, either about the merger or about services or about what you want people to know about who you are and where you are and how to receive your services. So I'm going to start with you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Chris. Well, part of it is we really appreciate you bringing us on so that we can share this information with the community. One of the things that I wanted to highlight is we do have a new website coming, LuminaAlliance.org. Right now, you can go to that page and it will give you connections to both the Stand Strong and Rise websites, because we don't quite have that new website up and running. But I just want to start letting people know that that is coming and available, and it'll be available in Spanish and accessible. We'll have all accessibility tools available with it as well. Also, our phone numbers, just again, with the crisis line, that 24-hour information and crisis line is, you know, 805-545-8888. Our business line is a different number. It's 805-781-54. No, I know. I keep messing it up.
6400.
Thank you. This is why you both have to come with me for every interview.
And that's why they give you business cards, Jennifer. Which you don't have. So you have the excuse.
I have no cheater card. But we are also getting a new phone system. So right now, all of our lines are going into and being picked up by an auto attendant, which is not ideal, but we are hoping to have our new phone system up here within the next several weeks so that when people call, they're getting a person on the other line. So, but we are here, we are in business, we are doing everything that we've always done, just more efficiently and congruently.
Yeah, and collaboratively, yeah, too. Yeah. Karen.
Yeah, I think Jenny said it well. And I think what I would add is that, you know, we rely directly on the community for their help as far as volunteers. We accept volunteers to help us with our crisis line. We do a 65-hour training. And so if you're interested, reach out. And of course, our organization relies on donations as well. You know, the support of the community is paramount to be able to provide all of these services to survivors. So, you know, giving us a call, being involved, going to our two events that are coming up in October and March are really, really important to our organization.
Do you want to talk about those events real quick, the one in October?
Sure. The one in October is October 2nd at Octagon Barn. That one will be a family-friendly event. We'll have lots of family fun and information fair. And so more information will be coming out about that. And then at the end of March, we'll be having our big gala out at La Lolita Ranch. So that will be our first really big gala together. And we're just really excited about that as well.
That's fantastic. And Jane, I'm going to come back over to you.
Yeah, you know, throughout this whole merger process, we've been talking a lot about the importance of breaking down silos and collaboration. And I think our new name really encompasses that. And Jenny talked about the word alliance and how this is really everyone's work. I mean, violence is a public health issue. It's a socioeconomic issue. And we really are reliant on the whole community getting behind us and supporting this work and participating in ending violence. And so we're just really excited to open this new chapter as one awesome organization and just ask the community to stay tuned and get involved.
That's fantastic. And again, for the website they can go to, it is what?
LuminaAlliance.org.
Okay, and the phone number?
805-545-8888.
Okay, great. And I want to thank my guests today from Stand Strong and Rise. Now serving this low community is one organization under the name Lumina Alliance or Alianza, Lumina. Jennifer Adams, CEO, Jane Pomeroy, CPO, and Karen Borges, COO. Next week, Fred Monroe will be here as he speaks with guests from Race Matters Slow, and they'll be discussing their work to amplify the voices of Black and people of color in an effort to build an actively anti-racist Central Coast. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible by underwriting through Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us today.